Hello and welcome to episode 5 of Spraffcast with me, Mark Allen, and the Wizard of Spraff, Eli Silverman.
Abanabazuki!
What was that?
That's my magic word.
Abanabazuki.
Yes.
And what does it do?
It makes me wet myself, just a bit.
Right, okay. I'm not entirely comfortable with you proclaiming yourself the Wizard of Spraff.
Why?
Because I'm just, you know, I'm just Mark Allen and you're the Wizard of Spraff. All of a sudden you've gained seniority over me. I don't like that. You were initially the sidekick. You are getting way above your station now. I think you should be the Spraffling.
That's got a certain charm.
Yeah, the Spraffling.
Yes.
Okay.
Can I still say Abanabazuki?
Yeah, okay.
Okay.
Right, we'll do it again this time.
All right.
Hello and welcome to episode 5 of Spraffcast with me, Mark Allen, and the Spraffling, Eli Silverman.
Abanabazuki!
Anyway, how are you, Eli?
I'm very well,
you
Mark.
Good?
Thank
I'm
you.
Feeling pretty chipper at the moment, actually.
Yes.
The sun's come out.
The sun's out.
It makes a massive difference, doesn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, so it's all good at the moment.
I wouldn't say it's all good.
Well, the majority of it is good. There are obviously some gripes.
There's some bad things in
the world. But let's not dwell on those.
Okay.
It's not the time for dwelling on gripes. It's also a special day today, as you know. You know, which April the 23rd? Come on, Eli.
No, let me look at my diary. I've got it in my diary here. It's Take Our Daughters and Sons to Work Day.
Is it really?
Yes.
Officially, where? Where the hell is your diary from? Yeah. Slovakia or something?
No, it's America.
Take Your Daughters and Sons to Work Day.
Yes.
In America.
Yes.
Is there anything else in that?
Well, yesterday was Administrative Professionals Day.
Are you serious? The Administrative Professionals get their own special day?
Well, they don't get the day off. They get to go in and everyone else has to administrate for them.
That would be quite fun.
Well, if you're an Administrative Professional, it's probably the highlight of your whole year.
Probably. Well, no, because they probably mess it up. Because let's face it, if you're administrative, you're probably a little bit anal. You like things done in a particular way. If you let any old plumber in to come and do your work for the day, you'd be like, oh, just give it here. Stop dripping on my work.
You've administrated that totally wrong.
Yeah. Got to do...
Which cowboy administrated that fire?
Yeah, exactly. They're going to have to completely rebind it. It'd be stressful, if anything.
I just made that up. It's not true.
Administrative professional.
Well, that's true. But I don't know what these celebrations entail.
I can't believe what else is in there for April.
Well, we just come out of National Library Week.
National Library Week?
Yeah.
Wow.
Passover.
Let me cut to it. Eli, today is St. George's Day. The patron saint of this great nation of England.
Georgie.
George. George, obviously, you know, he wasn't English himself.
Where was he from?
Apparently he was Palestinian. This is the, we just kind of decided to hijack him, go, yeah, he's ours, yeah, he'll represent us.
Okay.
But, yeah, this is the thing. I reckon, on St. Patrick's Day, there's no way that you would have gone through the entire day without finding out. Being accosted by a group of drunken, shamrock-hatted simpletons staggering across the road, dripping Guinness down their slacks.
No, you'd know. You'd know.
You'd certainly know. But you just don't get that for St. George's Day. There's no sort of related brouhaha, is there?
There's no brew, let alone a ha-ha.
No, it's a very sad state of affairs. I genuinely think that we should celebrate our national day a bit more.
Okay.
Starting now. Let's...
Yay!
Whoa!
George!
Yes, to George!
Up, George!
Screw the dragon!
Kill that dragon!
Yeah, George!
What we could do is you could get some Palestinians and get some Komodo dragons and they could have a symbolic face-off.
What, are you going to try and get some Palestinians to take on some Komodo dragons?
Why not?
Do you not think they're having a rough enough time as it is right now without introducing some kind of warfare with animals?
It would be a spectacle.
It would indeed, yes, but I don't think it would be entirely ethical.
Well...
An arm wrestle with a Komodo dragon. Get a Palestinian and a Komodo dragon... Arm wrestle.
This
at the
like
end of it, some beer, some general celebrations.
Croutons.
Maybe even a maypole. You know, just let's crack up the English.
Yeah.
Because this is the thing, I think, with English identity, it is a little bit vague, isn't it? Well, the Irish have a very strong identity. They've got the shamrock. They can get behind the shamrock and the Guinness and the Blarney Stone, you know, and that's a very solid identity. The English, it's a little bit more vague. And so, I mean, the best way of thinking about this is if you went into a pub and you were there's an English-themed night, what kind of novelty foam hat would you be given for drinking a certain amount of ale?
What about some armour?
I like that.
George had armour. He had a helmet with one of those visor things.
Apparently so. Yeah, well, okay.
He had a lance. You could have a fluffy lance.
A fluffy lance.
Yes.
That's a little camp for an icon of our realm. Can we not? It's not on a stag night or anything. You know, he slayed a dragon. Okay, how about giving punters a free piece of armour per pint they drink? Right, so that by the end of the night, they will have a full suit of armour. Like, the last thing that they would have would be the visor, like the full headgear. Because that would be the little sign to say you've had enough. You can't drink through that.
You can't drink through
efficiently.
That.
So that would be like, yeah, I think you've had enough, mate, put on the visor. And then they put on the visor.
And then they're protected on their way home.
Exactly. So when the inevitable ruckus starts, which generally starts when English people have had too much drink, they can hurl themselves at each other with abandon. It's not going to hurt.
And then you'd have a real feel of St George's Day. All the clanking chavs having their little fights.
Yeah, exactly. That could be a winner.
Yes.
Okay, let's do that.
We'll do that next year.
Next George's Day. It's a little bit too late to organise now, but
I want some armour.
Has some anonymous stranger got right up your nose lately? Why not let them know?
It's been a while since we've had a Lonely Hate, I believe. We didn't do it last Spraff. It feels like ages.
Yes.
I've got a Lonely Hate. Here we go. You, middle-aged woman with children, one in a pushchair, one by your side. You, wearing a red gingham top. Me, I just got off the 73 bus at Angel Station. And as I was making my way from the bus to the tube station, you, with your pushchair, veered towards me. Now, obviously, I didn't have a great deal of time to get out of the way. That didn't really matter. You weren't looking where you were going. You were just trying to barge anybody out of the way, using your pushchair as some kind of battering ram to leave people in your wake just so that you could get on that poxy bus, you know? And when I had the audacity to glance behind me to say, what the fuck you thought you were doing, you gave me the filthiest look, like, how dare I? How dare I get in the way of you and your precious child? Well, your child is fucking ugly.
Drink.
Oh, she well annoyed me, man.
Yeah.
I hate it when people do that with the pushchairs.
They use it, yeah.
What do they do with their children, man? That's child abuse.
It certainly is.
What happened when it was snowing? Was the child there with a snowplow?
Yeah.
It was a handy snowplow. Yeah. Wheeling it up and down the driveway to make sure that she could get her fat ankles into work or something. Oh, she really annoyed me.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't mind. You know, she could say, I'm quite polite normally.
Yeah.
You know, if she said, excuse me, or, you know, even just a kind of little smile, a bit late.
No, there was just whatever. A little bit
of indifference. It was just like, well, you're going to have to move because my child's safety is at stake.
Yeah.
I think I should have just stood there with my knee kind of pointed.
At its ugly face.
Knee in the face. Probably make improvements. Ooh, ridiculous woman. I had one of the most eventful train journeys I've ever had recently. I've been to visit my mate Jim in Liverpool. Now, generally, I love train journeys. You know, there's something really kind of nice about sitting on a train, just relaxing, gazing out the window, watching the world go by for a couple of hours, two and a half hours that journey is. And I was just quite looking forward to it. I was a bit hungover, you know, we'd had a fairly heavy weekend, so I was just, it's going to be quite nice. So I walked through the tube trying to find the best place to sit. I found the perfect place. It was a seat on its own. There was no one next to me, no children on the carriage, and the only person nearby was a man in the seat in front who was asleep. Perfect. No trouble. So I start looking out the window and I hear the train announcer, Jane, the train manager, told us all about where we were going to be stopping and the various options with the buffet, things like that. And as soon as Jane finished speaking, the man in front of me, who I previously assumed was asleep, piped right up. At that point, he shouted out at full volume, "I love Jane the Train! I love Jane the Train." Not Jane the Train Manager, no. Jane the Train, as if she's some kind of character from a Thomas the Tank Engine book.
He's made the mistake. He's thought that she was the actual train.
Well, maybe he did. He thought the train was actually speaking to him.
Yeah, he couldn't see the source of her voice, so he thought it must be the train itself.
Kind of crazed mind comes up with that delusion there. So, but either way, he didn't feel threatened by the train talking to him. He was, you know, quite benevolent. In fact, he loved the train.
It turned him on.
Yeah. So, you know, at that point I thought, this is probably the time now where I slip out of this carriage and go and find somewhere else. Unfortunately, he knew I was behind him. He spun round in his seat. He kneeled up on his seat and, like, leant over and started looking at me. And at that point, what am I going to do? I have to converse with the man. And he just started chatting at me straight away. The first thing he said to me was, "Do you know what you look like?" I was like, "Well, kind of do, yeah. I do tend to look in the mirror every single day." But I knew that wasn't what the answer was. I said, "Well, no, what?" And he said, "You look like a coser." A coser, which I wasn't entirely sure what a coser was. Turns out, a coser is a policeman. Which kind of makes sense, you know, that is a... It's a hybrid of cop and rosa, I suppose. Yeah. It's a coser.
Yeah.
Oh, so he accused me of looking like a policeman. I, at that point, didn't really know what to say. So I said, well, I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, you know. That's a rubbish thing to say. Yes. Me, but, you know, I was kind of nervous.
Well, you're testing the waters.
Yeah, I was kind of nervous. Well... He went, no, it's a bad thing. And then he held up a bag in front of me, right? He had a little plastic bag, a clear plastic bag, and written on the side of this plastic bag was HMP Services. Her Majesty's Prison Services. So he's like, oh no. Oh dear. So basically, the upshot was that he'd literally been turfed out of a prison in Liverpool and put on a train back to London, where he was from. And I ended up having a 2.5 hour chat with him. Now, I think other people around, there were a couple of people around, they were slightly intimidated because he was proper boisterous.
Yeah.
He was making a lot of noise. But I found him quite intriguing. I didn't feel threatened by him. And I thought at that point, maybe I'm here for a purpose, you know? He got on that train at Liverpool, let's face it, he was quite feral. At this point, he was shouting, he was yawping, he believed that the train was talking to him, for Christ's sake.
Yeah.
You know, and I thought, well, maybe I'm here to reintegrate him with society by the time he gets off the train. I've got 2.5 hours to transform this man's life so that he's you know, capable of interacting
with
society.
It's like that show.
What?
What was it called? Guardian Angel.
Guardian Angel?
No, what was it called?
I have no idea.
You know, the guy's an angel and he's got...
Oh, Highway to Heaven?
Yeah.
No, I was thinking that I was he was sort of Eliza Doolittle.
Oh, I see, yeah.
You know,
My fair convict.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah, and I was trying to train him to carry himself in polite society. I had him up and down the train, walking up and down the train with a book on his head just to check his poise. But at one point, he went to the toilets with a cigarette and started smoking. Now, you know, that's illegal. I know. It's probably the least of his crimes. He'd just been in prison for what he actually said was 20 years. 20 years.
That's like armed robbery. That's something serious. Violent assault.
It's not smoking a fag on a train, is it?
Certainly not.
Not even like several times. So I started to get a bit concerned at this point. I thought he's been out, probably a couple of hours and he's already reverting back to his old ways. It's not good. At that point, Jane the Train turned up. She's walking through checking everyone's tickets. He's in the toilet having a cigarette, and Jane knows what's going on. And she stops banging on the door and going, "You can't smoke in there." And he's like, "Oh, I'm not smoking." He clearly was. There was smoke billowing out of the door, man. And she said, "If you keep smoking, I'm going to phone ahead and we'll have police waiting for you at Euston." At that point, I thought, that's the last thing this guy needs, you know. He really doesn't need to be straight back into prison again. Certainly not for something as avoidable as smoking. You know, he came back out again and... you know, I did have a word. I said, "Look, it's not worth it, mate. It's not worth going back inside for smoking a cigarette." And I thought he agreed with me. I thought I'd kind of helped him to see a bit of sense. And we started talking again. And he was an oddball, I've got to say. I had my computer with me. And I started writing down the things that he was saying to me, just because I thought this man is value. When he said he said, "Are you a policeman?" and I said, "No." He went, "It's a good job, because if you were, I would cut you up and stuff you under the seats." Yeah, and it was the sort of, you know, kind of, there was a menace in there.
Yeah.
There was a sort of, you know, I'm glad I wasn't a policeman at that point, because yes. There would have been at least one bead of sweat. He asked me to lend him 50 quid. You've got to admire the man's gumption there, haven't you? You got to admire that. Told me I looked about 40. I looked like old Bill. he told me he got 25 weapons on him.
Whoa.
I was like, where? Where can you stash 25 weapons? Unless, like, he's counting, like, a toothpick as a weapon.
Well, you could have all your fingers, all your toes.
Yeah. That's he could 20. Probably could damage me with each digit.
Yeah.
One of the things he said was, they put young offenders in with grown men. That was a serious source of, kind of,
Well, that's a serious point, isn't it?
He didn't like it. And the reason he didn't like it is because, quote, "You can't serve one of the cons up and leave them under the stairs. You get an outside nick for that." That's why. That's the reason he didn't like being in with the younger people.
What's an outside nick?
I have no idea. I don't know what the difference is. Well, I think this word of advice that he gave me was, don't ever go to a private jail. Keep HMPing. I was like, oh, thanks for the advice. If at all possible, I will HMP. Yes, I will keep it real. And then he started trying to freak me out. I'm convinced of this. Because he turned on me at one point. And he said the following thing. He went, "Johnny South is looking for you. He says you were dissing his bird 2 years ago. You've forgotten, but he hasn't. He's coming after you. You know Johnny South? He knows you." It was like proper menacing.
That's menacing.
Like, who the hell is Johnny South? Maybe I did diss his bird. Bissed his dirt. Maybe I dissed his dirt right out, man.
You did not diss Johnny South's bird.
I don't know. Do you know who his bird is?
She's that Pamela Anderson, isn't she?
I don't know. I just sort of think, I was pretty sure he was winding me up, but you never know. And then what happens is, towards the end of the journey, he started rolling another cigarette again, and I just thought, oh no, this is going to go wrong again. He's going to go into the toilets to smoke it. Jay's going to find him. He's going to be arrested. I'm kind of his guardian at this point, at least until we get off the train, and then he's on his own. But, you know,
you don't want him just to end up.
So I said, "Look, man, it's not worth it." But he ignored me. He was, you know, he was nicotine crazed. So he went to the toilet door, but someone was in there, and I thought, "Oh, that's a good job." You know, he's not going to smoke. No, what he actually did then was smoked in the open carriage. Just started smoking in the carriage, and I was just like, "Oh, this is just terrible." Because I don't know him well enough to say stop smoking.
Yeah.
And then another train person came along and told him to put it out, and his response to that was, "Jane, the train should hand the reins over to you. You've got a nicer voice." So it could have kicked off, but it didn't. It was, if anything, it was complimentary. Then we started getting into London. He put the cigarette out. That's
he did.
Fine. Yeah.
He did when he was asked.
He did what he was asked. But, you know, he didn't listen to me. That's fine. Maybe my voice wasn't nice enough. Too much like Danny Dyer.
Yeah, he doesn't listen to Danny Dyer.
But I thought at that point, with 10 minutes to go, we're all right here. We're okay. I think he's going to get into London and then he'll be released into the streets and that'll be fine. Yeah. It's like releasing an animal into the wild in a lot of ways. You know, you've got, it's your job to get them safely to the wilderness.
And then it's...
Then they're on their own. Yeah. Let the law of the jungle take care of that.
Yeah.
And I thought 10 minutes to go, this is all right. And then he started realising that we were coming into London. Because you start getting the signs, don't you? Like, the builders, merchants and... the phone numbers and stuff. He saw a phone number for London.
Okay.
At that point, he lost his fucking mind. He started screaming at the top of his voice. He was going, "0181, London, motherfuckers! London! London!" He was, like, screaming. People were really, literally scattering out of the carriage. They thought, that's it. He's
gone off.
He's gone off now. Whatever brief, tenuous lid was on his emotions has now blown the fuck off, and he is untethered in a carriage and starved of nicotine. This is a situation.
Starved.
Yeah.
Starved of nicotine.
Yeah. He's going, "Motherfucking London! London, motherfuckers! London!" I'm going, oh, Christ, no. They think I'm with him as well, you know. And so yeah. I've got a sort of, he's all right, he's harmless, really.
But he was with that bloke who looked like Danny Dyer.
Yeah,
he was exactly. A Roman.
Oh, I felt terrible at this point. I was like, there's nothing I can do. And I'm just kind of praying that it will all blow over. And then he turned to me and he said, when we get to Houston, you're coming with me, mate.
Whoa.
You're going to be my accomplice.
Whoa.
It wasn't an invite. It was a threat, basically.
Yeah,
it was an order. You are going to be my accomplice. And then he went, we're going to Wapping.
Oh, dear.
I have no idea what was in Wapping or why he invited me.
It's grim.
I said, I'm not. I'm not going to go to Wapping with you. Yes, you are. I was like, for Christ's sake, I'm going to be hijacked. I'm hijacked by an ex-convict. Soon to be re-convict. Because let's face it, he wasn't long out of jail, was he? In both senses of the word.
Yeah.
He was going,
a brief interval.
I just feared. He'll be inside right now.
Yeah.
There's no question. I can only hope that it's a HMP.
He'll do his best to keep on HMPing, won't he?
He will do. And, you know, maybe he'll share a cell with Johnny South. That'd be nice.
He could update South on your misdemeanours, couldn't he?
I think you should update South on my misdemeanours, yeah.
Leonard Frannels was minding his own business when he was suddenly accosted by a brief yet brutal spraffing. Please be careful the same thing doesn't happen to you. Oh, and don't have nightmares.
Eli, it is now time for Poetry Smackdown. I do hope you've brought your gumption.
I have brought a rhyming poem
to
the plate.
I went beat poetry. I found it really difficult, I've got to say. Because I initially wrote a rhyming one. But I couldn't help it. I just like wrote it down, got it out there. I was just like, get that out of my system. And then concentrate on not rhyming. But I'm kind of more pleased with the one that rhymes. But obviously, you're not going
to
hear that.
That's the whole point of the exercise. To get you out, to open your boundaries. Yeah.
So we're not getting that on this Spravcast. What you are getting instead is a beat poem from me and a rhyming poem from Eli. So, do you want to go first or second? I think you went first last time, didn't you?
I'll go second. You hit me. Hit me with this.
Okay. This is a poem about fluff. Just what is your point, fluff? Like a party's uninvited bore, you foist yourself upon me, hiding in my moistened nook. Lurking in my clammy cranny. Shh, this is serious. But why do you persist? My feelings should be clear to you by now. I fished you from my navel just this morning, flicked you under the shoe rack. But by evening you are back within your realm, mocking my attempts to depose you. One day you will have no place to hide, fluff. I intend to diet just to spite you.
There we go. I like that.
Yeah?
Yeah. It's a different side to your whole lyric.
I did notice, though, writing beat poetry, it's kind of aggressive and a bit...
Yeah.
Did you notice, have you read that writing, a rhyming one is more a beat? Have you got a chirpy poem?
Yes, it is more chirpy, actually. Yeah,
it's
strange.
It's all in the meter, isn't it?
Yes.
Go on then, off you go.
Get ready for the lyrics here. Okay. Naval fluff. Naval fluff, the bogey of the belly. Considerably less sticky, but unfortunately more smelly. Button stuff, collect it on your mantle. But burn it up at intervals, or you'll have too much to handle. Stomach muff. On the beach it gets grouty. Fun for every man and girl. Unless you have an outie. Freak!
Okay.
Come on.
Nice. What the hell is grouty?
You know, a bit gritty.
Yeah, no, that's a tenuous rhyme for outie. I know exactly what that is.
Sprav, 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 spravcast. Sprav, 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 spravcast. Sprav, 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 spravcast. Sprav, 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 spravcast.
Sprav. Oh, sorry. When I was a kid, I used to keep a diary. Did you ever keep a diary when you were a kid?
Well, I tried, but then I never wrote anything in it.
So you didn't?
No.
You didn't try then?
I failed to. Yeah.
You just use it to keep up to speed with like National Admin Professionals Day.
Yeah, and what day of the week it was.
Yeah.
That type of stuff.
Well, I wrote a diary. In 1988, I was 11? Was I 11?
It's your life, don't ask me.
I don't know. No, because this was earlier on in the year. So I was actually only 10 when I wrote this diary.
Okay.
And I found this recently. My parents, basically, well, my parents found it and said, here, you have your shit back, basically. Just gave me a pile of stuff. And my diary was in here, and I read through it. And I've got to say, I was a proper little twanny. Twanny, not tranny. There, by the way. I was a proper little twat head. Like one of those really annoying kids that was just really judgmental and pious. And, like, I sound like a 40-year-old. It's really weird. I'm very judgmental of other people.
Prudish?
Prudish, certainly. There's no swearing in there, not a tiny swear. I mean, you think, as a kid, it's a secret diary. You should be swearing your little socks off.
Yeah.
But no, not a word of it. I was the most I swore was by calling Richard Gilby a dim. That was the most it got. I'll just give you a little peep into my world when I was 10.
Please do.
In 1988. March the 3rd, for example, I start talking about my brother Andrew. My twin brother, that is. So we're in the same school. And I say the following about this. Andrew was fighting Lee Freestone and he belted him in the face. Andrew is going to be a right yobber when he grows up. He's going to be a right yobbo. These are not the words of a 10-year-old. These are the words of a wizened 60-year-old who's seen too much of life and knows that youth will turn bad if they start out in a thuggish manner. And I'm casting judgments on my twin brother. I should forgive him, but no, he has one little fight with Lee Freestone and already his card's marked. The next day, right, the 4th of March, the following, Andrew had another fight and made Anton Panitsky's teeth bleed. He made Anton Panitsky's teeth bleed.
Wow.
And yet again, I'm worried he will turn into a yobbo. Still concerned.
You're concerned.
My concerns haven't changed in the space of a day. I am actually worried he's going to turn into a yobbo. And, to make matters worse, he's made Anton Panitsky's teeth bleed. How did he do that? He has magic in his fists. How can you make teeth bleed?
Well, perhaps Anton Panitsky was some kind of freak with...
He was. He was
with...
like...
blood vessels in his teeth.
Well, I always suspected as much. I'm happy to say that my brother is not a yobbo. He's a very gentle person now. He's not in any way yobbish, but whew, that storm was pretty turbulent those 2 days.
Wow.
You know, by the weekend, it was all forgotten.
What happened on the weekend?
We played Grove Farm at football and drew 1-1. I worked my guts out for a Man of the Match trophy, but Richard Clarke got it.
Oh.
Bitter.
There we
bitter.
See the showbiz.
Yeah.
The showbiz.
That's it, man. I worked my guts out. Right. That's another thing. Work rate. At 10 years old, you don't start considering your work rate. You just like run around giggling.
Such an old
but
man.
But it's like, oh, yeah, it's really odd. I'm just there casting aspersions on people. You know, Alison Hone was wearing a slotty dress again today. She's going to turn into a right slag.
No, you didn't say that.
No, I didn't. But I might as well. I'm like some kind of Victorian grandad.
Yeah.
This is terrible. Had a journey on the tram today. I think steam power's the way forward. Oh, God, it's really embarrassing. The best thing about this is that every single day, for some reason, I rate the days out of 5. I give days a star rating out of 5. So... the day that Andy was fighting Lee Freestone on the 3rd of Thursday, 5 stars. 5 stars.
It was good, even though it...
Even a fight between my brother and Lee Freestone didn't dent the quality of that day.
It was quality.
The next day, Friday the 4th, when obviously, as we know, Anton Panitsky was discovered to be a teeth blooder.
Freak.
A teeth bleeding freak. Another 5 stars. What will it take?
What are the criteria?
How can it get better than that? You know? I'll tell you how it gets better. On that Sunday when we played Grove Farm and I didn't get Man of the Match but Richard Clarke got it. 5 stars and the word classic underneath it. It's a classic day. An absolute... You imagine, where's the rating go if I'd have won Man of the Match? Where would I have gone?
You'd
after
have to
that?
Invent a whole new bracket.
A whole new system.
Yeah. You'd have to have another
show. It would have shattered my rating structure, yeah. Right in the one game. It's probably a good job Richard Clarke did take it down, because I don't think at the age of 10 knowing how I was, I could have taken the upheaval of social revolutionary change to my rating system.
You set the bar too low on that rating system.
Classic.
Is there another little musical beer? Just wasting a bit of time, I suppose. I suppose I should also mention the word spraff at some point. Lovely.
You might remember from the last Spraffcast we talked about April Fool's Day, April Fool's Day's jokes, and I decided that I was going to play an April Fool's Day joke on Eli. You don't know this, Eli. My plan was I was going to send you a packet of ginger in the post.
Nice.
So that you'd be like, oh, I've peeled and opened the ginger. I've been proper pranked. There was one major drawback with this, is that I don't know where you live. I've never been to your house, have I? You've never invited me to your house. No. All I know that is you live somewhere in the northwest of London.
Yes.
Maybe between Swiss Cottage and St John's Wood.
Well, that's
like
exactly
that.
Right, yeah.
Okay, but it's still a vague and quite densely populated area. So I thought, this is fine, I can get around. I obviously couldn't phone you up and ask you your address. You'd have rumbled that straight away. You wouldn't have opened the ginger. The prank would have been ruined. So I phoned up your best mate, Virgil. Who you've known, how long have you known Virgil?
Since I was four.
Since you were four, right?
30 years.
30 years?
Yeah.
So I thought, if anyone knows where Eli lives, it's Eli's best mate, Virgil. He didn't know where you lived at all. Has he ever been to your house?
He has, yeah.
He has? But did you blindfold him or something? How does he not know where you live?
It's a flat. He doesn't, you know, he just doesn't know the address. He knows he can get there in a car. But he doesn't know the actual...
He didn't let me know that. If he'd have told me that, I'd have given him the ginger to take around himself. He probably wouldn't have done that. He's got things to do.
He's got fish to fry.
Spices around.
Abanabazuki! Now, we need more mail, people.
We do need more mail. Some other things to talk about. That would be quite nice.
So,
If you want to email us with anything, the address is spraffcast@googlemail.com.
That's spraffcast@googlemail.com.
That is the end of Spraffcast episode 5. If you've got anything you want to send to us, then that would be magnificent. Otherwise, listen out for the next Spraffcast. That'll be probably about 3 weeks. I think what we should try and do is another Stalker Tourist.
Yes.
The weather's nicer, we can get out there. So for the next Spraffcast, we will stalk a tourist. Poetry Smackdown, is it?
Poetry Smackdown.
Okay, what do you think we should do it on? What about National Professional Administrators Day? What is it?
Administrative Professionals Day.
Yeah.
Now that's a challenge.
Yeah, okay.
Get some poetry out of that.
Shall I do beat or rhyming?
You can do any.
So we'll have something for you there, and we'll have all manner of other spraff and nonsense. But in the meantime, thanks a lot for listening. Keep downloading. Tell people if you like it. If you don't, shh. Thanks a lot. Bye.
Bye.
I said thanks a lot.
Okay, do that bit again.
I don't think it's the best way of ending.
Okay.
Thanks a lot. You've been great. Bye.
Bye.
Do you think you've been great a bit much?
No, they have been great.
My navel is a magnet for lots and lots of fluff. It stores it by the shed load and can't seem to get enough. But far from being angry or getting in a huff, it pleases me to pick at it while standing in the buff.